in the context of that, the Bali Tosis discuss a much broader topic, and that is the topic of whether Mechila, Tzricha Kinyan, or Ein Tzricha Kinyan. We started discussing that last week. I want to discuss this big Tosis here on Vav Amud Aleph, which we started with last week. I want to continue with that, and I want to discuss some related questions. Let me first take care of the Pshara part of it, so that we can conclude our discussion of Pshara for now, and then we'll talk purely about the Tzricha Kinyan and Ein Tzricha Kinyan parts. Did I miss the light, even though I moved back?
Right here.
What? Yeah. So, So the Gemara here on, just to get us back, the Gemara here on Vav Amud Aleph has a very fascinating exchange on the bottom of the, towards the bottom of the page. The Gemara says, Amar Ravashi, Shema Mino, this is five lines up from the bottom of the page. We've seen it already, I'm just reviewing a little bit. The Gemara says, Amar Ravashi, Shema Mino, Pshara Ein Tzricha Kinyan. We see from here that Pshara does not require a Kinyan. Now, Kinyan usually means Kinyan Sudar. It's going to be part of our discussion. The Isol Kedaitach Tzricha Kinyan, were you to think that it did require a Kinyan, now, what does it mean, Tzricha Kinyan, Ein Tzricha Kinyan here? What it means is, in other words, we're dealing with a situation where the default, two people have a dispute, right? And they're going to come to court, to adjudicate, for the adjudication of this dispute, right? For a decision to be made by the judges. And default is they have the right to din. And that's the way that this, particular problem is going to be solved. However, in a situation where both agree that they prefer pshara, they're offered pshara, they agree to pshara, as the case may be, so then the decision will be based on pshara, which we've been discussing for the last three or so weeks, right, rather than din. And the Gemara wants to know, do you require the commitment to go the path of pshara? Does that commitment need to be reinforced by a kinyan sudar, or not? Now, typically, let's understand what we're talking about. When I want to transfer an object, from one rishus to another, if I own something and I want to sell it to someone else, somebody wants to buy my object, so we're familiar with the concept of kinyanim, of a mode of acquisition. The halakha says that it's not enough that we have a verbal, typically, it's not enough that there are areas of the halakha where a verbal declaration is sufficient. They're rare. Amirasa legavoa, kimbisi raso lehedjot. If you want to dedicate something to Hekdesh, so amira is sufficient. Bificha zu tzedakah, when it comes to a commitment to give tzedakah, it's quite possible that the verbal commitment is binding. There are some other examples of this as well. But typically, when I make a binding commitment to transfer, either to, a commitment of funds, or a commitment to relinquish my ownership, or to transfer ownership to someone else, so typically there's a requirement of a kinyan, an objective mode of acquisition. And we know that there are different types of kinyanim. These are the topics of, in Masachet Kiddushin, in Masachet Bava Basra, right, in many different places in Shas, there's a way to transfer metaltalin, there's a way to transfer karka, there's a way to transfer animals, behemagasa, behemadaka, there's a way to transfer abadim, there's a way to enter into a binding, committed halachic relationship, right, kinyan kidushin, which isn't an acquisition, but is a legal relationship, as we've discussed. So these are all done by method of kinyan. And what the Gemara is discussing here is whether or not this mode of acquisition approach is necessary for the commitment to go the route of pshara or not. You can see it seems to be quite, on the surface, quite a different kind of an issue. Typically, we're talking about the transfer of assets, the transfer of some sort of a commodity, right, of ownership. Here, we're not talking about that. At least not superficially, we're talking about giving up din and instead opting for pshara. So that's what we're talking about. And the Gemara basically says that, you see from the Shakla Vatari, the previous Gemara, that pshara eina tzricha kinyan. Pshara does not require kinyan. In other words, the agreement, the loan, to go the route of pshara without it being accompanied by some sort of maisa kinyan, in this case a kinyan sudar, is sufficient. The isokadaitach tzricha kinyan, because if you were to conclude that there's a requirement of a kinyan sudar, leman tzricha, leman damar tzricha tlasa, lamali, then why would you, anybody think that you need three judges for a pshara? Tisagi bitarti, betray rather, let it to suffice with two judges, velikni mine, and you'll accompany by kinyan sudars. Why should anybody need three judges? After all, a commitment is being made, that should suffice. Now, the way Rashi reads the Gemara is very fascinating. Rashi says, what's going on here? The kivin de kana mine, right? Since there is a kinyan, lamale bezdin, what do you need a bezdin? Lote ela matana bialma. Why don't you treat this as a matana bialma, as the transfer of a gift? Umidaito, vihimis kayemes. And lahachi binan plus aliapas koch bezdin, dafagav the lo kanamine, lo nehedru. So Rashi's interpreting the line of the Gemara is as follows. We're saying, listen, there are two ways to look at pshara. I'm adding a little to Rashi, but I don't think I'm really speculating or going beyond so much. There are two ways to look at what's happening in pshara. One way is to look at it as a kind of matana. When you look at it as a matana, what you're really saying is that the pshara part, the compromise part, is a simulation. Or it's a, you know, it's an impression. You get the impression that there's a real compromise going on here. Now, there is a compromise in terms of the result, but basically what's happening is you're asking the parties to sign on to or to commit to a certain conclusion. You're asking them to give up their rights and to substitute for that, right, a different disposition of the case. So if Reuven would have won $100 in court, right? So if you're going to make a 50-50 compromise or an 80-20, whatever it is, the amount that was entitled to him, let's say he was entitled to 100, and now he's only going to get 80, right? So in a way, you know, you're asking him to give the other fellow, to sign on to giving the other fellow a $20 gift. Now, when you want to give somebody a gift, you need a kinyan, typically. So well, that's what Rashi seems to be saying. We don't need three dayanim, because really what's happening here, no matter how it may look externally, is that, you know, with all the bells and whistles, what's really happening is Reuven's giving Shimon a $20 gift, because the dayanim think it's a more peaceful, harmonious, maybe long-term, constructive solution. Maybe even short-term constructive solution. So if really what's happening here is that Reuven's giving Shimon a $20 gift, you don't need three judges for that. It's sufficient that we, you know, implement that the way that we always implement it, which is by a kinyan, right? On the other hand, if you need three judges, then the implication is that really what's happening is that you are substituting a, you know, one form of din, I'll call it the objective din, for the more idealistic but, you know, more personalized din. But that, you know, doesn't require kinyan. That's not a typical method of kinyan. That's the, you know, decision to invest, you know, a different or greater flexibility in the judges, so that they can come to the legal conclusion, you know, that constitutes pshara, right? So the question is, when the Gemara turned back and said, the hilchasa pshara tzricha kinyan, no, and the way Rashi read it was, vafilu nasus bishlosha, meaning wrong, but not telling us why it's wrong. It's a saying, you said before that either you need a kinyan or you need gimel, and according to Rashi, you explained it because either this is matana or it's din, right? But it's not true. You need a kinyan, even though you need three. So now, in theory, there are two ways to go. There are two explanations that could be provided. One explanation is that we were wrong when we said that when you employ a kinyan, that you know, implies that this is really kind of, no matter how it looks, what's really happening substantively is that this is a matana. That's not true at all. It remains a din pshara. So why do you need the kinyan? The answer is because the default was objective din. You want to switch to subjective personal din? For that, you need a certain more objectified commitment, and that is accomplished by the use of a Maisa Kinyan. Mostly Maisa Kinyanim are, you know, methods of transfer, and there's no transfer here, there's just commitment. The answer is, that's true mostly, but it's not true exclusively. And let's just add that especially of all Kinyanim, Kinyan Sudar, this Kinyan that is made here, you know, it may be the most appropriate for commitment. And I think I gave the example already, but a couple of weeks ago maybe, and that is the Gemara, the Mishnah says in Bab Metzia, Masna Shom Rechinam Lios Keshoa, Masna Shoa Lios Keshoa Rechinam. Let's say that the Torah provides for four, models of Shomer. Shomer Chinam, Shomer Sachar, Socher, Shoel. And they have rules and regulations, right? There's a correlation between, you know, responsibility and liability, right? The more benefit you gain, right, the more liability and responsibility you should have. So if you're a shoel and you're able to call an shalo, you're able to use the object, so therefore you pay even if an earthquake destroys the object. It wouldn't matter where it was, it would have happened anyway, but it doesn't matter. It happened on your watch, it happened in your possession, right? If you're a shomer chinam, who is very benevolent and generous, he is, you know, choosing to watch this object without any kind of compensation. So the only time he's ever going to pay when something happens to the object is if it's pure negligence. But if, you know, somebody breaks into his house, or the object is lost under circumstances that are not negligent, then we're not going to charge him because he was doing us a favor to begin with. If he's negligent, that's a different matter. We still are investing reliance on him, right? I mean, we're not going to discuss all the Aldin HaShmira right now. I'm just trying to make a point. And that is that there are four shomrim. The four shomrim have dinim that correspond very logically, different kind of contracts for different types of benefits and responsibilities, understandably. But the Mishnah says, Masne shomer chinam lios kishoel. If they, the two parties, namely the mafkid and the nifka, the owner and the watchman, if they agree to different conditions or to mix and match, you know what? Are you going to be paid like a shomer chinam? I mean, you're not going to be paid, but you're going to have the benefits of a shoel. Or the opposite. You're going to have the benefits of a shoel and the liability of a shomer chinam. So if they want to do that, they can do it. That's the Gemara Masha Kosim B'Torah. However, the line in the Gemara is, right, only if the commitment was made besudar. Right? Vehu dekanu miyado. If the Shomer Chinam, right, committed, right, to the liabilities of the Shoel, or if the Shoel, right, got the Bailim to waive the liabilities of Shoel and to be treated like the Shomer Chinam, and that was done bederech kinyan sudar, then it will be effective. So it's a similar kind of question. It doesn't prove anything, but I'm just trying to make a broader point. There are two ways to look at what happens in that Mishnah in Bav Metzia. Dali. One is that really the Torah is more rigid or inflexible than you might think. Meaning there are four categories of shomrim, and you know this is a very precise science. You can't tamper with it. But the Mishnah says that Masa Shomer Chinam Lios Keshoel, Masa Shoel Lios Keshoel Chinam. The answer is, it may look like you are reconfiguring, you know, the actual responsibility or the actual benefits, you know, and rights, prerogatives. It may look that way, but really what's happening is that the Dine Torah of the Shomrim are applying, and a side deal is being made that simulates a reconfiguring of Shmira, but in fact is just about money, it's about dollars and cents. In other words, the Shomer Chinam is a Shomer Chinam. Right? And he is not allowed to use the object. But like, there's a side deal that allows him to use the object. Or, to put it this way, the shoel is a shoel, and he should be chayiv even for own sim, no matter what. But, you know, if the owner wants to waive, wants to say, you know, you owe me $100 if there's an earthquake, but I hereby mochel that, or I, you know, we're making a deal that I'm giving you a present of $100 if there's an earthquake, then you can do that. So that's one way to understand, and then that really means that the Torah's four Shomrim are static. That's all that there are. The other way to look at it, very popular way in many of the Mefarshim, is that what the Mishnah seems to say is holds, meaning you really can negotiate, you can really reconfigure the Dinim of Shomrim. But the point is that since the default is according to the Torah's configuration, so the commitment to redefine Shomrim requires an objective and a formal component. Therefore, v'hu dekanu miyado. Now, it's fascinating. If you look at the Gemara in the beginning of Masechet Bava Basra, the Gemara speaks about kinyan devarim bi'alma. That sometimes, you know, when people make an agreement or a commitment, and they do it b'derek kinyan suder, it doesn't work because it's kinyan devarim bi'alma. What they're dealing with is way too like amorphous. Let's say they agree to split their property. The question is in which direction. You know, Baruchos it's called, and they make a Kinyan Sudar about that. So the Gemara says, it's too abstract. You can't do it. It's Kinyan Dvar and Bialma. So again, it's an interesting issue. That broadly speaking, there are two ways to understand that Gemara. One is that, listen, if you're going to make a Kinyan, it's because really you're dealing with dollars and cents. You're dealing with something concrete. You're transferring money, right? You're transferring objects. And if something is Dvar and Bialma, if it's like, you know, a much more amorphous or abstract commitment, then it's not subject to a kinyan. That's called kinyan dvarim. Or is what the Gemara is saying something else, and that is, if it is possible, and therefore there can be at least an intelligent discussion about using a kinyan as a way of reinforcing a legal commitment, even one which doesn't have anything to do with ownership or title or transfer, but one which is purely based on a commitment, even a commitment to a certain legal perspective, right, as opposed to, you know, rights and prerogatives that are being waived or acquired and so on. The only thing is, even that requires something a little more, there has to be something a little more tangible about it. So, you know, Baruchos is Dvar Mialma, but the idea that Kinyan Sudar is applicable, even when we're not talking about actual titles, transfers, and so on, that's a very legitimate notion. So it's fascinating. I didn't tell you to look at this. There's absolutely no way that the Rambam in front of, unless you're like a Navi. You don't have to have Sefer Kinyan.
Mishpatim's... next door. They have Rambam next door.
I know, but if I go next door, then it, you know, what does that do for your... So, anyway...
There's an F.
Right? That's not surprising either. So the Rambam in Parakei of Vilas Mechira, Halacha Yud Aleph and Yud Beis, the Rambam has a very interesting halacha where he says the following. He says there are two types of mistakes. I mean, it's my paraphrase. There are two types of mistakes that people make. There are things that absolutely do not require a kinyan, but that people think do require a kinyan, and they make kinyanim and they're meaningless because they have no impact because they're not necessary. Right? If you want to appoint a shliach, a messenger, an agent, to do something for you. So he says a lot of people do that and they make a kinyan, you know, between the mishaleach and the shliach. But the Ram says, based on the Gemara's meaning, it's meaningless, it's inconsequential. There's no requirement for such a kinyan. Like when you make the rabbi a shliach to sell your chametz, again, if you want to sell him the chametz, or you'll make arsha, that's a different story. But the shlichus, per se, doesn't require a kinyan. Ram has a few examples of that. Then he says there's another kind of mistake that people make, and that is sometimes they make kinyanim where the kinyan doesn't help you, not because it's unnecessary, but because even with the kinyan, it doesn't work. Those are like the examples of what we were talking about a second ago, kinyan dvar bialma. And the point of the Rambam is that, you know, you have to know when a kinyan works and when it doesn't work. But it's interesting, in Parakei, where he has this discussion, he's talking about kinyan, stam kinyan. Stam kinyan means kinyan sudar. You know, but like the, you know, you use an object to kind of concretize your, we'll talk more about it in a minute, your commitment, where it's more of a symbolic, the object's role. It's not really an exchange, right? It's a, use a pen, use a handkerchief, something of that sort. We use that. It's a very ubiquitous kinyan. It's fascinating. The word kinyan, stam kinyan, is a reference to kinyan sudra. Kinyan sudra is an interesting kinyan. It applies bein b'metalplin, bein b'karkos. It's almost the most ubiquitous kinyan. It's the stam, the default kinyan. The question is all that a coincidence or not? We'll get to that in a second. What's interesting is that the Rambam, when he talks about these issues, is talking about kinyan, as is the Gemara, kinyan dvar b'yamba, or the Gemara b'metzi that I just mentioned, kinyan. The simple pshat of the Gemara here in Sanhedrin is we're talking about a kinyan sudar. Why am I telling you that? Because it's if there is going to be any kinyan, right, which can be about the commitment itself, or going a legal route, as opposed to change of title, change of transfer of ownership, and, you know, a relinquishing of prerogatives, and so on and so forth, the best candidate, the first candidate, is going to be kinyan sudar. Because kinyan sudar is not, as we'll discuss, a kinyan begufa davar. It's not really an exchange. It's to begin with a more symbolic method of kind of just making more concrete your commitment. It's a what we call, at least according to many Rishonim, a kind of kinyan das. And as such, if there's going to be any kinyan that can do this kind of, have this kind of effect to reconfigure, you know, Dine Shomrim, to, you know, to commit you to a method of law, method A as opposed to method B, Shara, and so on, right? It's going to be Kinyan Sudar. Okay, so when the Gemara here says, why am I telling you all this? When the Gemara says, V'hilchasa, you do need a Kinyan Sudar, even though you need three Dayanim. So my preferred explanation, A, it's more interesting in the Gemara, B, it fits in better with what we've been doing with Pshara all along. Obviously, I prefer the view that Pshara is a form of din, that it's a different category of din, rather than saying you're, you know, completely abdicating the role of din, and you're just, you know, disposing of the, you know, the what would have been, let's say, the proper disposition of the monies, you know, in a different fashion. So the first perspective when the Gemara says v'hilchasam pshur tzicha kinyan is to say that we are rejecting Rashi's comment that kinyan implies matana. No, there's no matana here. Reuven is not giving away $20. Reuven, who would have won $100 in, you know, objective din, and now is only winning $80 and therefore is relinquishing $20, he's not giving away $20. His kinyan is the commitment to the non-default, to the more, you know, if you will, exotic, you know, the more voluntary methodology of pshara as din. That's the commitment. The result of that is that a din Torah has been decided. The judges stand by the psak din, and the reason that you're paying the $20 or not paying the $20 is not a batana. It's a psak din. Okay. What's the kinyan for? The kinyan is the commitment to this methodology. If that's the case, so I think that there would be two likely consequences. Number one, we'd be far, far more likely to say that when does this kinyan take place? There are two possibilities. One is before any information, any detailed information about how this case is going to, you know, be disposed is available. Right? In other words, the second that they commit to this process, that's the time to make the kinyan, because basically what we're doing is we are charging the, you know, but we're formalizing our commitment to charge the judges to assume methodology B instead of methodology A in their adjudication. So when should that happen? Of course, before any information is known. It has nothing to do with the ultimate conclusion of the Dayanim. It has everything to do with the charge of a different maslul, a different approach to this concept of din. That's number one. Number two, if you ask me, if this is what is happening, then you, this halakha would have to be limited to something like kinyan suda. Now, you could not substitute a kinyan chazaka, kesef, meshicha, chatzer. Let's say, you know, oh, the amount of money is sitting in a chatzer, so, or whatever. It's interesting, in Simon Yud Beis, in Chosh Mishpat, which is where Pshara is discussed, so the, you look there, both in the Torah and the Nosei Kelim, the Shulchan Aruch Nosei Kelim, you'll see there's a very lively discussion there. They don't put it in exactly these terms, but what happens in cases of Chuvah Sarajba? Chuvah Sarajba speaks about a case of where a person made a kinyan chazaka in the context of Pshara. Others speak about chatzer in the context of Pshara. Right? But if you ask me, if we're talking about this approach, namely the commitment to the process, chazaka doesn't make sense. Chazakas and kesef and chatzer all relate to chetzas that are being transferred, not to a commitment to an approach to din. It would have to be limited to the case like the Gemara, where we're dealing with actual kinyan. That's conclusion number two. Of course, conclusion number three is that if you take this view, then there is absolutely no connection between what is being discussed in this Gemara and the Shas discussion that the Rishonim here join, and that is whether Mechila, Tzricha, Kenyan, or Ein Tzricha, Kenyan. Because the case of Mechila, Tzricha, or Ein Tzricha, Kenyan that the Rishonim discuss revolves exclusively around an object, a right, right? A sum of money, right? The difference between, we'll get to that, back to that in a second, being konen, being mochel, right? So that's a debate, whether mechila tzricha kinyan or mechila ein tzricha kinyan. But basically, when two balei dinim end up, I shouldn't say end up, when two balei dinim, right, commit by means of a kinyan to a pshara, the only way to look at this as mechila is to say, well, alternatively, had they gone the route of objective din, this would have been the result, right? You would have had result A. When you compare result B to result A, there's a discrepancy on the mechila side of X amount of money or object, and therefore the question is mechila tzricha kinyan and mechila ein tzricha kinyan. But if what we're saying now is correct, that's not what's happening here legally at all. What's really happening is Reuven and Shimon are agreeing to drop the requirement of objective din for the sake of pshara type din, the dayanim are making a decision. That has nothing to do with the topic of bechila tzricha or ein tzricha kinyan. Yeah.
But if it's done before the dayanim rule, so how can you say that he would have been entitled to 100? Because possibly the whole impetus for going this route is it's the tmiyah if he'd ever would have gotten that. That $100 from the dayanim.
What do you mean?
In other words, the whole driving force for entering into such a kinyan, right, is he's not quite certain at the end of the day.
No, that could be. We'll get to that in a second. That may be another reason, you know, to fine tune what's going on here. I'm just saying, all I'm trying to say is that if we take the view that pshara is a form of din, and that the kinyan, therefore, that we're talking about in the Gemara is not a typical transfer of assets kinyan or rights, but is related to empowering the dayanim to make a pshara type din rather than a din type din, then I'm just saying it stands to reason, we'll see in a moment whether we should qualify it, it stands to reason that the kinyan can be made early, should be made early, yeah, in the process. It stands to reason that only Kinyan Sudar, not any other Kinyan, is relevant to this kind of a Kinyan of commitment. And three, it has nothing to do with Bechila Tzricha or Ein Tzricha Kinyan. Now, in a second, what I'm going to show you is the other side. There's another way to read the Gemara, right? And I think that's how Tosfos read it. And that other way is to say that when Rashi said that if you need a Kinyan, it's because it's a Matana. That's Chai V'Kayim. That part, that premise we do accept. What we don't accept is the second premise of Rashi. What did Rashi say? If it's a Matana, right? And therefore you need a kinyan, there would also, then there would be no reason to require three dayanim. What would you three dayanim for? It's just a simulation of a din that's really, in fact, authentically a matana. Maybe the answer to that question is, true, this is a matana, but since it's a matana which is done in a more bleak, you know, manner, it's done by simulating, you know, a process of din, so therefore part of the simulation is to pick the number of judges that we typically use. So it's kinyan, it's matana, but it's only three dayanim. But if that's the case, then there would be much more reason to think that the time that we make this kinyan is later, right? Number two, we wouldn't necessarily be limited to kinyan sudar. And number three, it would be part of the topic of mechila tzricha or ein tzricha kinyan. Now, being part of the topic is not the same as saying that it would have to, you know, it would have to fall into place, because that would, of course, be a contradiction. We're saying that here pshar tzricha kinyan, and usually most are shown with the opinion. You either have to conclude that mechila tzricha kinyan because pshar tzricha kinyan, or that there's some technical difference between the two. And what we'll see in a second when we review the Tosas is that Tosas was of the opinion that there's a technical difference between the two. But it's a technical difference, meaning it belongs to the topic of Mechila Tzricha Kinyan, Ein Tzricha Kinyan. Here we need a Kinyan because, as we'll see in a moment, it's a more, and this goes to your point, it's a more uncertain Mechila. Typically, in the case of a Mechila, I know what I'm being mocha. In other words, I have the right to collect a $100 loan that's outstanding to me. I choose to waive that right, to pardon the debt. Right? I know what I'm pardoning. I know it's $100 that he owes me. I probably also know, you know, what the likelihood of his paying is, and whether it's really worth $100 or, you know, on the market, you know, of whatever it is, it's only worth $80 or only worth $20. You know, it's probably not worth $100 since it's outstanding, right? I also may have all sorts of cheshbonos about why I'm doing this that are irrelevant, you know, for the moment. But the point is, I know what it is. And when I'm being mochel, I know what I'm being mochel. Here, as we'll see, Tosas will indicate, if you go early, meaning if the kinyan is made before anybody know, then, as you say, no one knows. That's one of the reasons why Bali Dinim are interested in a pshara, is because, you know, it's a way of hedging their potential losses, right? I don't think it's the only reason. We've discussed this in the past. I think there could be other reasons. You know, I might be willing to give up some money, even if I'm very, you know, very confident that I'm going to win more the other way. Or, you know, even if I know I'm going to win the other way, you know, if I have a sense of conscience, or if I feel that, you know, harmonious resumption of ties, business ties, personal ties, you know, I want my daughter to marry his son, so I'd rather go the pshara route and everybody, you know, can dance at the wedding, right? So there could be other reasons other than hedging your financial, you know, losses. And I think of that, you know, in the real world is probably true. But still, the consideration is an important one. So I'm going to show you that Tosas really goes the second route in Vehilchas HaPshara, Tzricha Kinyan. But I still think that in the Gemara we have these two options, and that these would be the Nafkamin. Yeah.
If you say, if you adopt a view that Pshara is very close to this,
yeah,
but fine-tuning,
yeah,
is the outcome considered to be a Matana?
No, not at all.
No. So that when you're saying that the outcome is a Matana,
right,
you're really saying that,
yeah,
it's a wholesale, yeah, departure from...
I'm saying...
A wholesale departure from Pshara Karovaladin.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly what I am saying. I'm just saying when the Gemara concludes the Pshar Tzricha Kinyan, it's hard to know whether or not they're giving up on premise number one in Rashi or premise number two. I'm just setting it up in that way. That's exactly what I'm saying.
I think conceptually there's a big difference between before or after, because if it's before, it's just to empower the dynamic.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
So the commitment actually is the Kinyan is not between the...
Right. That's what we're saying.
Two people,
it's the commitment of both of them to a process.
Yeah, but one commitment, each one is independently committed to the Dayan, and they empower the Dayan.
Exactly, 100%. Exactly what we're saying.
And that, but that's why Chazaka wouldn't play a part or whatever.
Exactly what we're, that's exactly what we're saying, 100%. Whereas if you take the other view, there it's basically, it may be a different kind of stage, but basically it's an agreement between them. 100%. That's exactly what we're saying. So if you look at Tosas, Tosas says the following. Tzricha kinyan. Im nefarish the kinyan shal pshara osin kodem apshara. See, Tosas start now. I gave you this background, you know, to just, A, to link up some issues together, but now it's just much easier to read Tosas also. So Tosas, that's what Tosas starts with. Im nefarish the kinyan shal pshara osin kodem apshara. The first thing Tosas is addressing, because what really bothers Tosas throughout the sugya is, how come pshara tzricha kinyan if mechila ain't tzricha kinyan? That's already a point of view. That's already the point of view that says that pshara isn't din. Pshara here is mechila, or form of mechila. So that's where Tosas begins. Im nefarish the kinyan shel pshara osim kodem apshara. When do you make this kinyan? If you make it before there's any information about the case, the konin zemizeh lasos kemosha yomra dayanim. And what's really happening is that they're committing, not to the process of pshara, per se, but to the result of the pshara that the dayanim come up with. They're signing a blank check, essentially. Hein l'shalem, hein limchol, whether it be to take money out of my pocket or to give up, you know, money that should be coming to me. Hein l'daktek mikan, still, right? Then ein l'daktek mikan de bialma mechila tzricha kinyan. If this kinyan is made early on, then we shouldn't be bothered by its lack of conformity with the universally accepted psak that mechila ein tzricha kinyan. Why? De mashe tzarech hacha kinyan ala mechila. The reason this seems to be an exception is for very good reason. Mishum de ilav hava kinyan hava kamochi mechila betos shelo hayodea sheyomru limchol kolkach. He didn't know the details, and therefore it's a mechila betos, and therefore it needs an added kinyan. So that was such a good answer that Tosa says maybe it's such a good answer that the kinyan doesn't even help either. Biafagav the hashta the ika kinyan. Even though now you might say, well, now that there is a kinyan, if that's the problem, maybe it's still a problem. So it's a kinyan betos. Have a kamo kinyan betos. Miu. Alima milsatve bekinyan mibalo kinyan. Nonetheless, since there is a kinyan, it strengthens the commitment, and it strengthens the commitment enough that it's not a kinyan betos, but you do need the kinyan. That's Tosas' first suggestion. So Tosas has done two things. By implicitly, he didn't, you know, bang on the table and say, by the way, I want you to know, I think this topic belongs to the topic of mechila in tzricha kinyan, because I think that mechila here is about disposing the money, not about picking the, you know, the methodology, right? And now I'm about to apply it to, you know, the question of where, when you make the kinyan. Tosas is very, they assume a lot, you know. You have to reconstruct it. But that's exactly what they're saying and what they're doing. We've gotten into the head of the Bali Tosas here, you know, even though they've said what they've said very succinctly, that's what they're saying. Okay, good. Vafilu im nefaresh, now, does that mean that if we go the other way, that if we conclude that the kinyan that we're speaking of takes place not prior to the information about how the settlement is going to be, but it's a demand for a kinyan after the information is already there, we already know how it's going to resolve itself? Does that mean that it is typical mechila and therefore is a problem or is a proof against the rule of mechila in tzricha kinyan? That's the next thing that Tosas needs to address. So Tosas, vafilu im nefarish, even if we would come to the conclusion, shak kinyan hula achar pshara, that the kinyan actually takes place after the pshara is known, akati ein raya mikan, the matzi lemeimar, right, the hakinyan alosa shiyesh lola achar lefroa, aval hay demochil, ein tzarek kinyan. It still wouldn't prove, it still wouldn't be a problem against the rule of mechila ain't tricha kinyan, because maybe what we could say is that the kinyan isn't being applied in all cases. The kinyan is only being applied to the parties who are going to have to fork over money, not to the ones that are relinquishing, you know, outstanding money that is supposed to come to them. In other words, whatever is mechila, even in the context of pshara, does not need a kinyan. But whatever is a chiyuv l'shalem, that would require a kinyan. That's what Tosis is saying. One more second. Just give me one more minute because this is like part of a section. Miu b'halachos gedolos, since Tosis is doing this analysis, right? So he says, but you should realize that the b'halachos gedolos doesn't fit into this analysis. Pirush b'halach, pirush b'halachos dinim, the tzarech kinyan ala mechila. You do need a kinyan in this case on the mechila. Even Afalpi, Osim HaKinyan Akra Pshara. He has both ingredients. The Bahag was of the opinion that the Kinyan and Pshara takes place at stage 2, meaning after we know the Pshara, and that it applies not only to one who's going to be Mishalem, but even for one who's going to be Mochel. So that is against the analysis of Tosis, right? So Tosis says, Umiko Mokom, I have a third suggestion here. All of which to maintain this unspoken perspective, but very clear perspective, which is that this belongs to this topic and is a form of mechila because it's about the money, which is, mikomokom ein lilmod mikan al shar mechila shetei tzricha kinyan. This is still not going to be a problem, in terms of the broader view of the mechila in tzricha kinyan. Why? The mechila shayidei pshara afa bishi yadu sheyodea ma mochel Doma l'mechila b'tos of shemocha al pi atzasam shal dayanim she siu also limchal lefikach tzarech alamadavar ayidei kinyan. There's a third factor here, and that is that even though it takes place at stage 2, and even though it is even the mochel requires a kinyan, the fact that there is pressure, external pressure from the dayanim, that's what neutralizes the typical psak of Bechila Ein Tzrich Kinyan. Bechila Ein Tzrich Kinyan, because I'm doing it wholeheartedly without any kind of pressure. I'm taking the initiative. Here, right, I'm going along with, right, the pressure, the moral suasion at least, of the Dayanim, and therefore, even though it is Bechila, it requires an additional objective commitment. Yeah, there was a question. Yeah.
What I don't understand here is that the very by definition, if you're a Baal Din, there's an existence of ill will between the Baal Din.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would have been a pshara. They never would have been never would have been before a Beis Din.
And therefore,
had there been an inclination to make a pshara, they could have done that before going to a Beis Din.
Oh no, this is a question that we discussed somewhat back, if you remember. There are two types of pshara. There's a pshara of Baal Dinim, which can be done at any point, and there's a pshara that the Dayanim recommend.
Right.
This is the one of the Dayanim. Sometimes it takes, wiser, clearer, more objective, heads, to get people to see that there's a more peaceful, or a superior solution. Right? But either way, that isn't a problem. I think in the real world, that's true. In other words, sometimes the judge has a certain objective authority, moral authority, experience authority, stature authority, that, if he makes a recommendation, people will follow it. Whereas opposed to, people initiating where there's too much ill will. Maybe, they want to compromise too, but there's too much pride, there's too much... I'm guessing that all those factors, factor in. But either way, it doesn't... your question doesn't disrupt the analysis of Tosis, right? It's a separate question you're asking.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think, if I may be the practical one in this case, that there are good practical reasons why, even though what you're saying is, seems true, namely, if they're going to agree and it's all pragmatic, so why don't they just do it on their own? People need shepherding, sometimes. They need a more authoritative or experienced or an excuse to do the right thing. And I think that's human nature. But,
Brady would understand that if the judge says, to the litigants, I think you'd be better off settling this out.
Yeah, I think sometimes that. Right? Right. They could have come up with it. They're not, it could sometimes be two judges who are arguing or lawyers and they really know the law. But, there's a certain negius, there's a certain, in the heat of battle or pride or, sometimes I need the cover of a wiser, or just a third party saying, you know what, guys, this is...
Also, when the shackle is part of what's going on in court, it becomes evident
right.
which way the judge is going to rule, and then...
But that's something else. That, and that's a factor, too, in the Gemara, as we know, that, you know, Yodeh Hechen Adin Noteh, you know, Tchilas Adin, anything Tehu Gemara did, that's another, yeah.
Is there any... To take Tosfos' view that only one is being... needs the Kenyan Sudar, only yeah. the... Not the Mocha.
The Mishalim.
Only the Mishalim.
Yeah.
Is there any difference in the form in which the Sudar arrangement would take?
Well,
I'm just trying to think it's a way of objectifying what Tosfos is.
It sounds here like yeah. mostly we're dealing with, you know, the Makne, not the Kone. Because it's about giving up your rights or giving away things. But we'll discuss that anyway in a couple of minutes. I'll speak a little bit about Kelel Shulchan and Kelel Shulmakne. That's going to be relevant to the second half of Tosis. So anyway, that's the Bali Tosis. But I say you could disagree with Tosis completely just by saying all the things that we've been saying. And that is that, this is a pshara to a process. And this is akin into a process and not to the disposition of a... of money or rights, in particular, and then the whole discussion is just, moot. Yeah.
I don't want to be your face, but isn't it a little bit of a stretch to say that you need a Kenyan for this very small shift in process?
It's not such a small shift. I mean, it's consequential in terms of the results, and it's a default. You're giving up the default. We want to make sure that you are serious about having made this commitment, because there are serious consequences. I mean, there's okay. I don't want to tell you that Torah Chasal Mamona and Shal Yisrael, but people definitely are very that's true also. But Pachim Ketanim. But in addition to that, Pruta, Shava Pruta is Kameya, in these things. But certainly people get very emotional about these. So there are, as long as there are differences...
But not about a subtle difference in process. I agree that people get emotional about a dollar, but not about...
You're giving up objective... I'll put it this way. What's his name? Rabbi Yossi... Rabbi Lazar ben Osher, Rabbi Yossi Aglili didn't think it was a subtle difference in process. He's the one who said that Osra Livsoa Vakola Botseya Re Uchote Vakola Mavarikasa Botseya Kimanites. So he's the one who invoked, Yikov Adin Sahar. So I happen to like the view and Ripaskin that mitzvah Livsoa. So and I think it works much better according to that. But it's still consequential, Then Tosis goes on. The next part of Tosis I think we read already, and I don't want to read it again because it does take a little bit too long, but I want to do the third part first, and then I want to go back to something in the second part. The next part of Tosis is Tosis' Rayas, I'll just read the first line, that indeed, in general, the premise of Tosis was that Nechila ain't Tzricha Kinyan, then he's bothered by our Sugya, and then he has these three different ways, albeit not giving up on the relevance of the paradigm, to square things. But how do you know it's even true? Right? So this is like a very model Tosis. Subtle, and you need to know how to read a Tosis, but it's all in here, right? So that's the next part. Benir lahavi raya, right, the mechila ain't tzricha kinyan. The whole Tosis is based on the premise that mechila ain't tzricha kinyan, and therefore there's an issue that needs to be sorted out. Like, where did that come from? The answer is, I've got several sources that seem to indicate that behodom and perakam akabel, right, and so on and so forth, all the way down until the bottom of the page. Okay. What I do want to do before we continue and go back to that is I want to read the end of Tosis, because that's very relevant to point number, whatever it was, two or so, or what we began with. And that is as follows. Tosis says here, is the last line. We read the intervening parts last time. Ein ledaknik nami klal mikan. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Mikan. Just sort of mikan. Mikan chazar ben yitzchak barab Mordechai shehaya ragi lefaresh. the dafke nokat becheska sabatim kinyan bifnei shnayim. Aval ileke shnayim eina kinyan kinyan. Damaskin and hacha the pshara tsricha kinyan. Vafil hachi kam rabbanan pshara biyachid, etc. Oh, so this is a very interesting. This is a Tosfos that appears a number of places in Shas, and it goes, the issue that's being discussed is interesting in its own right, but also relevant a little bit to what we were talking about before. Tosfos says as follows: the Gemara says in Masechet Bava Basra Cheskas Sabatim, learned this some years ago, that Kinyan Bifnei Shnayim, Kinyan means Kinyan Sudar, right? The real what the Gemara really says is Kinyan Bifnei Shnayim Ein Tzarich Lomar Ksov. Normally, when two people enter into a transaction, unless specified, no one has a right to create a contract of that transaction. Right, unless it was agreed upon. However, the Gemara says that if a kinyan sudar is made in the presence of two witnesses, then under those conditions, the witnesses also implicitly have the right to draw up a contract on this, which authenticates, you know, this transaction. Kinyan bifnei shnayim, a kinyan sudar done in the presence of two witnesses, the ein tzarich lomar ksuv. But the Gemara doesn't say if you make a kinyan bifnei shnayim, then you know you can write up a contract and you don't have to get specific authorization. That's not what the Gemara says. The language of the Gemara is kinyan bifnei shnayim. It sounds like a matter of fact. A kinyan is done in the presence of two witnesses. Ve'ein tzarich lomar ksov. And you don't, when that happens, or since that happens, you know, you should know that there's no need for a separate authorization to draw up a contract. If the drawing up a contract is significant.
Who
would do the
authorization?
To the Aiden.
Who tells them
that
the
Dayanam
are tying to?
The two. I mean, who's making the statement? Kinyan yeah, Bifnei Shnayim?
Telling the Aiden to.
No one said the Halacha is telling them that. The Rabbonu Shel Olam.
Baskol.
On their own initiative, they can go and write.
If they witness a kinyan in the present, a kinyan, yeah, then they have all things. This is a debate among the Rishonim then. You know, and let's say they, let's say the Bali Dinim say, or one of the Bali Dinim says, please do not write a contract. Most Rishonim of the opinion, they can prevent it. But if they don't say anything one way or another, you don't need new authorization. Some Rishonim even think they can't prevent it. That's even more radical. Okay, maybe we'll talk about that for a minute anyway. But with the per people, the halacha is talking. Halacha is saying, kinyan bifnei shnayim, with kinyan in the presence of two witnesses, you don't need a separate authorization, you know, to initiate a contract. A contract can be written by the edim automatically. Now, if there was a chazaka bifnei shnayim, or a meshicha bifnei shnayim, or a chatzer bifnei shnayim, right, or a kesef bifnei shnayim, the Shnayim have no right to create a contract. For some reason, in Kinyan Sudar, they do. We'll get back to that in just a second. Okay? That's the halacha. But the Rivam used to invoke this language in the Gemara, and I'm suggesting that the dikduk part is this, right? Kinyan Bifnei Shnayim, it's said in matter-of-factly, not if, then. Kinyan is Bifnei Shnayim, and right, there's a consequence which may be surprising, which is there's no need to authorize independently to draw up a contract. So the Rivam used to think that that meant that the daf genokat becheskas habatim kinyan bifnei shnayim, that kinyan must be in the presence of two witnesses. Habalileka base ein hakinyan kinyan. That's what he used to say based on that Gemara, that if two witnesses were not present when this kinyan suitor took place, it would not be binding. But, says Tosfos now, here, that can't be true, that conclusion has to be wrong, that diuk has to be wrong. Daha, after all, maskinan hacha, here we conclude the pshara tricha kinyan. Our Gemara is saying that pshara requires a kinyan, so you have a kinyan, right? pshara biyachid. And yet one of the, remember the Gemara said that there's a view that pshara requires three dayanim, there's a view that says pshara requires two dayanim, there's a view that says pshara requires one dayan. Then the Gemara said, well, the one and the two, they're really the same person, just that some people think it's good to have two, because then if there's some dispute, they can authenticate that it really took place. But in principle, you could have a pshara with one, right? So if you could have a pshara with one, even though there is a kinyan, apparently there's a kinyan with one, yeah? Not necessarily, as the Tosis will point out, but that's what Tosis is thinking right at the moment. Therefore, the diuk in Balbasra, that every kinyan requires the presence of two witnesses, is incorrect. Okay. So you have to explain it. So why does it say that there in Balbasra? Right? Mishum dein tzarech lomar ksovu. Don't read it the way I read it before, which is matter-of-factly, kinyan is bifnei shnayim, and an additional consequence to that fact is, what you should read is, when the kinyan is done bifnei shnayim, then, you know, ein tzarech lomar ksovu. Okay. Then Tosafot says, ve'ein raya mikan klal. That's what the Rivam said. The Rivam said, I'm recanting my diuk. It's not just a diuk, it's a very, we'll discuss in a second. It's a very important conclusion, because it establishes kinyan suter as being very singular, as we'll explain in a moment. So the Rivam said, I used to think that I had this, you know, proof from the language of the Gemara. I've recanted it based on the Gemara here in Sanhedrin. So I no longer believe that this, you know, remarkable chiddush is true. So Tosis now says, V'ein raya mikan klal. If this is the proof, then it's not a very good proof. Why? D'yachal haknos bifnei shnayim l'kayim hapsara pshara sh'asa b'yachid. All the Gemara really says here is that if you want to know how many dayanim for a pshara you need, it could be three, it could be two, could be one. And then the Gemara says it's that the one and the two are the same, but the two is for the purpose of having witnesses. But there can be cases of one, and that's what the raya was. Obviously, if there's one, then it's not two. So there's a kinyan suter, which just doesn't have two people. But no one ever said that there aren't two people. We just said that there aren't necessarily two dayanim, right? The people who make the pshara. So maybe there's one dayan making the pshara, and there are two edim who are there for the kinyan suter, so it's not a very good proof. Okay. Rabbeinu Tam, hayim bedakteik. Midamrina on the Parakazov, Rabbeinu Tam didn't believe in this view either, that you need two people for kinyan sudar, but he had a different proof, and that's in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, which said, Hayomed Begoren, certain case where this guy is in a goren, he's in a threshing field, Ve'im Biyada Mos, right? V'yamris Madbea, Nikni Bechalipe, Nikni Nikolai Bemos, Agav Sudar, the Gemara there says, why don't you do a certain transaction by sudar? Upashat mina, they say, ein niknes bechalip, that sudar is not niknes bechalipin. I'm sorry, that matban is niknes bechalipin. The docha koyle leukme begavra artiloi. The Gemara says that it's difficult to say they're talking about somebody who didn't have a sudar on him, like he was completely without clothes, you know, that he could use for this kinyan sudar. Hashta, maila mishani. So the Gemara says, oh, they're looking around, they're scrambling around, trying to figure out this case. Why couldn't this guy make a kinyan sudar? You know, so they could disrupt this proof. Whatever. Say, okay, well, it's not likely that he didn't have any clothes on, right? Why not just say there were no witnesses, and you need two witnesses as a prerequisite for kinyan suda, right? Could go into like a tray, right? Vein kinyan mo'alala bifnei shnayim. If it's really true that a prerequisite of kinyan suda is the presence of two witnesses, so instead of worrying or figuring out, you know, whether the guy is wearing clothes or not, to say he's fully clothed, he's wearing a tuxedo, he has so many accoutrements you can't even count them. The problem is that there's no one in the Goren, you know, to be two witnesses. It's a much easier, more, you know, a more comfortable case. So the Gemara says, Ela shma mina devadai mahani. We see from here that there really isn't such a requirement. B'yesh dochin, some people reject that raya too. B'shem stam Goren mitzuyim babnei adam. Like, you know, most people are wearing clothes, and also most gorens, you know, threshing floors are not abandoned and isolated. So,
Boaz and Ruth.
Well, okay, good. I hear. Anyway, it's an interesting argument. Well, why am I? This is a very interesting piece in Tosis. Seemingly, not just seemingly, it has nothing to do with the rest of our discussion. Right? You could say it's a cheat that this is considered like a very large Tosis. You know, I mean, it is large on one part of the page. Right? But maybe the second half, it's like a totally different agav thing. It has nothing to do with the topic. So you could say it's not a large Tosis. I'm just joking. It doesn't really matter. But I am trying to make a certain point, though. And that is, Tosis ends up discussing this interesting side topic because he thinks initially that this Gemara, or there's reporting that this Gemara played a role in the Rivam's reversal of his decision. But what I think is interesting is something that is relevant to our topic, and that is as follows. The Rivam's original view, right, you need to understand, is sensational. Because the Gemara says in Masechet Kiddushin, we've discussed this many, many times, that when it comes to regular kinyanim, right, regular acquisitions from one party to another, the rule is lo ibri sahadi el lishakri. The only role the witnesses have is to document in case of controversy where you need evidence. So if there are witnesses, that'll help you. But we don't apply what we call eidei kiyum, l'kiyumim. It's a subject of the Gemara. The Gemara says in Kiddushin, right? There were these two people, these two rabbis who made a transaction. And they said, listen, we both agree, we're both honorable men, right? And we made this transaction, and we both agree that we made the transaction, but there were no witnesses. But we both agree that we did it, right? And now, one of us would like to, you know, retract his commitment, but we admit that we did this. So are witnesses necessary? L'kiyume milsa, are they necessary because they're part of the binding, you know, character of this commitment? Right? And without their presence, there is no kinyan. In which case, it's not a question of believing or not. Everybody agrees what happened, but what happened was insufficient. Right? What happened was inadequate. Or, no, lo ibri sahadi el lishakri. The purpose of witnesses is only when there's a dispute whether it took place. But if they're honorable men and they admit what happened, there's no dispute. You don't need the edim for the chalos hakinyan. You need the edim if there's a dispute in court. So we paskin unequivocally in that Gemara in Kiddushin that lo ibri sahadi el lishakri. When it comes to monetary matters, the role of witnesses is limited to evidence in case of dispute and controversy. What's that?
Impeachment.
Okay, impeachment. Sounds very...
presidential.
Yeah. All of the above. Good. Right? Fine. So, the Rivam thought that there's one exception. No, we know there are exceptions in other... Kiddushin requires any key. Right? If you have a marriage, that's the Gemara and Kiddushin. That's where all this all comes up. Gemara says in Kiddushin, Sabachem and Aleph, Sabachem and Beis. We talked about it last year. The Gemara says, Amakadish b'fnei d'achad, choshen l'kiddushin or ain't choshen l'kiddushin. Right? If there's only one witness to the Kiddushin, is it working out? So the Gemara says, you know, why don't you say, hodas baldin k'meidim dami? If he and she both agree that, you know, he gave her the Cracker Jack ring, you know, and they both admit it happened, even though there were no witnesses. Hodas baldin k'meidim dami. So the Gemara says chav lachrim, right? Since this affects other people, and then we'll discuss what exactly that means. So we don't rely on hodas baldin. That's what we call eidei kiyum. Right? Kiddushin requires the presence of witnesses. Without the presence of witnesses, even if we know it happened, even if we believe them it happened, even if they admit that it happened, it doesn't matter. But in Dine Mamanus, typically we say, the same Gemara then goes on and tells a story about these two Amoraim who entered this transaction and they were wondering whether they could back out, even though they both admit it happened, because it didn't have l'kiyume milsa. And the Gemara says, no! Lo ibrisana l'shakra. The take away from the Gemara, according to 99% of the Rishonim and the Poskim, is that in Kiddushin you need a Nekiyum, and in Imamunis, Lo Yibrisabi, on the Shakri. And what about Gittin? What about Yivamis? And what about the whole discussion? However, the Rivam used to think, based on the Gemara in Bava Basra, that there's one exception in Dine Imamunis. That is Kinyan Sudar. When you make a Kinyan Sudar, you need a Nekiyum. And that is the view, you should know, of the, at least some Rishonim connected with the Ravid. The Ravid in, the Rambam says in Parakei, Hilchos Mechira, Halacha Tes, that you should know, says the Rambam, Lo Ibri Sa'adi Al Shabri, that the purpose of witnesses in Dini Mamunis is to authenticate what happened, and therefore Hodos Baldin works, and therefore a Kinyan, meaning Kinyan Sudar, that's Tam Kinyan, does not require a Kiyam. Once you know that there's discussion going on, you can understand why the Rambam felt the need to even mention this in the context of Kinyan Sudar. Right? He was obviously refuting what was a known position, not necessarily the Rambam historically, but probably at earlier roots. The Ravid in Parakei, Hilchos Mechira, Halacha Tes, says, Omer Avram, right? Ein hakol modim bazeh. Not everybody agrees with the Rambam that when it comes to Kinyan Sudar, you don't need two witnesses, you know, in order to define the Kinyan. In Bava Basra, on the Gemara, Kinyan Bifnei Shnayim, Vein Tzar Klamar Ksovu, the Ravid in Shita Mekubetzes is quoted in Bava Basra, quoting the Gaonim and then himself as saying that maybe you do require Eidei Kiyum for Kinyan Sudar. Exactly like the Rambam. Why? Why? So, of all kinyanim in Dine Mamanis, Dafka Kinyan Sudar should require Eidei Kiyum. But the answer seems to be very simple. We've discussed Eidei Kiyum in the past. Reb Chaim was of the opinion that Eidei Kiyum is connected to the magnified role of das, of commitment, you know, in a context of Kinyan. In other words, why is it that Kiddushin requires any Kiyum? So Rabbi Chaim explained, because Kiddushin isn't just an agreement. It's an agreement, Chavlachrini, right? It's an agreement that, that part is my explanation, but I'm assuming Rabbi Chaim agreed. It's an agreement with consequences that affect other people's personal status as well, right? It defines family, and it impacts, you know, all of Klal Yisrael. That is both a cause and a reflection of the fact that something happened here, or something is happening, that is of, you know, that is elevated and transcendent. Meaning, it's not just an agreement of the parties that to live together, to have certain mutual, commitments, you know, and so on and so forth, you know. But rather, it's a new status. It's the creation of a new reality, a chalos ishus. And for that you need a higher level of commitment, and also the presence, as reflected by the presence of a formal, solemnizing group, the Eidim. Oh. So the same Reb Chaim also thought that Kinyan Sudar, not in connection to Eidei Kiyum, as far as I'm aware, although I'm sure he would have put the two together, but I'm not aware that he did specifically. But what Chaim did say was, the Rambam's of the opinion in Hilchos Mechira, Parakaf Tes, that Katan is excluded from Kinyan Sudar. The Rambam disagrees. In Hilchos Avadim, the Rambam says that Avadim don't have Kinyan Sudar, and the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam disagrees in those places, and he says, you know, it's not true. Shaharei hakinyan hareu kakesef l'chol davar. No, against what he says about kinyan Eidei Kiyum. But basically the Ravid says we usually treat, you know, kinyan sudar, you know, even though it isn't really an exchange, because what's happening? It is this commitment which is worth some exorbitant amount. It's always exorbitant relative to the sudar, the pen, the handkerchief, whatever it is. So it's not an exchange. It's more of a symbolic concretization of das, right? Instead of just saying I'm committed, I'm kind of symbolizing my commitment by this exchange, or by focusing on this, kind of symbolic, a metaphorical, you know, representation, you know, of a quid pro quo. But it isn't a real quid pro quo. So that's how Reb Chaim understood that Kinyan Sudar has some real strong roots in Rishonim. Isn't really a Kinyan of exchange, it's a Kinyan of Das. So when you put that together with the other one, which is that Eidei Kiyum, you know, usually reflect a situation where the level of commitment isn't just an assent, you're going along with the action. You know, I'm doing this action and I'm serious about it. I assent to its conclusion. But rather you're creating, through your commitment, a kind of elevated status and stature. That's why you need Eidikiyum, or that's part of what Eidikiyum is accomplishing. So you put those together, so then the idea that Eidikiyum might be the only kinyan in Dine Maminus, where we don't say La'ibri Sadi and La'shakri, but we say that there's a kind of Eidikiyum, makes sense. Moreover, how come it translates into a shtar? That's also unique din in kinyan Sutra. Kinyan, b'fnei shnayim, we'll take the same Gemara, right? The ein tzorech lomar ksov. If you did a Mashicha, if you did a Chatzer, if you did a Kesef, whatever it is that you did, Hagbah, right? It doesn't automatically give you the right to create a contract, right? One of the parties doesn't want a contract. The one who's Yadol al-Tachtona, because it's evidence, could be it's connected to Shibudim, you know, liens and mortgages, right? Either way, it limits your ability to... You know, to end this, to terminate this relationship and say, oh, I paid him back. Right? Or whatever. You can't do that if there's a shtar and it's out of stand. Anyways, how come the only kinyan suda? So some of Farshim explain, well, kinyan suda is the most ubiquitous, the most frequent, the most common. You know, it goes metalpa and karka and this and that. And, you know, so it's kind of implicit that when you go this kind of every man's route of kinyan sudar, that unless you specify otherwise, you're also agreeing to, you know, the writing up of a contract. It's an umdana, for whatever reason. But, especially those who think that you can't stop it even if you try, which is a minority view, I mentioned that before, the idea of writing a contract is also based on the level of commitment, dasam skayev. Right? When we learned shtaros some years ago, right? When we learned gittin, we emphasized this point very emphatically, right? After all, there's a problem when you write a shtar. Every shtar should be, this is the Rambam and Rabbeinu Tam, and the Ri, they all discuss this. Every shtar should be a violation of the rule of mipiem below mipik savam, right? Torah says, al pi shnai meidim, mipiem below mipik savam. You have to hear from them directly. They can't, you know... They can't, you know, write, well, they can't phone it in, and they can't telegram it in. You know, they can't just write a letter. They can't email it in, right? Mipiyam v'lo mipik savam. So the Rishonim explain, what's the difference between that and a shtar? So the Rambam has view, the Rabbeinu Tam has his view. But the majority view is the view of the Baal HaMor and the Ri and the Baal HaTosis, which is dasam iskayev. The difference is, if witnesses want to write a deposition and send it into court, they can't do that. There's a requirement of interrogation, there's a requirement of their presence, you know, and their actual involvement. That's what we mean when we say, mipiyam v'lo mipik savam. However, to use the language of the Baal HaMor, you don't say mipiyam v'lo mipik savo, meaning, what a shtar is a dasam iskayev. It's the commitment made by the party, who is the committing party, right? Not only that he's going to go along with this transaction, but that he is even willing, right, to generate a paper trail, right, to provide the other party with evidence. So if I'm going to borrow money, I'm the mischayev to pay back. I'm mischayev myself to that there should be a shtar in the hands of the malva. But the point is, that's a level, that's a higher level of commitment. Because I'm not only committing to the transaction, I'm committing, right, to an additional layer of protection, right, for the other party, against my interests. So that's what the pshat in the Gemara, what they got, kinyan bifnei shnayim. So according to the Rivam, it's amazing, the original Rivam, or the Ravid, or the Gonim of the Ravid. Right, kinyan bifnei shnayim, kinyan sudar. Right? It's all the same idea. This higher level of commitment on the one hand requires two witnesses, unlike other Dine Maminus. On the other hand, right, it also generates on its own a shtar, That's an amazing idea. But if you're chozer from the din of the Rambam, so only one of those two things remains. But that's still amazing. Now, why am I so excited about it? Well, it's an interesting topic in its own right. But it goes back a little bit to what we were talking about before, which is, this Gemara says, Pshara, Tzricha, Kinyan. Right? And the question is, that's the only Gemara we have. And certainly it's talked about Kinyan Sudar. I mean, Kinyan means, Psalm Kinyan means Kinyan Sudar. But the Tshuva, the Rajba, talks about Pshara in a case of Kinyan Chazak. And there are other Rishonim who talk about Chatzer and Hagba. And one of the things I was saying before is that it depends what this Kinyan is doing. If this Kinyan is about disposing of a Matana or Mammon or Mechila and so on, so then it can, in theory, it can employ any number of Kinyanim, as long as they fit to what it is that's being, you know, transferred. But if we take the other perspective in the sugya, which is, even if you hold Pshara Tzricha Kinyan, it's not a Kinyan like Mechila. It's a Kinyan to the process of Pshara, right? Instead of going to Din 1, we're going to Din 1A. We're investing the Dayanim, right, with the right to adjudicate on the basis of a more flexible, more ambitious Din. So what I was trying to say was, that really only makes sense in the context of Kinyan Sudar. That doesn't make sense in the context of Chazaka or Kesef, because that's all about the actual object of the transfer. It's not about the commitment to a process. So I think that's very fascinating that, you know, the discussion of whether, of the uniqueness of Kinyan Sudar in this sugya, whether Tzricha Kinyan, Ein Tzricha Kinyan, is very much part of the reason that you would ever say what the Rivam originally said, or what the Ravid and the Gaonim, you know, that they say, is the very reason why this perspective would be limited to Kinyan Sudar. I should also add, since we're getting, you know, we're in the period of Sfira and we're getting closer to Shavuos, although we're still on the Pesach side of things, that of course the Makar for Kinyan Sudar is a Shalaf Ishnal, you know, Benasam L'Reihu, which is the discussion in Rus. And that's where the Gonim get their idea that, you know, there was a Kinyan Sudar, there was Edom, there weren't Edom. The Gonim quote about the Shidduch Gubetzes, by the Raivin and the Shidduch Gubetzes and Bal Basra. And that's also where you have the famous argument between Rav and Levi in the Gemara Bab Metzia, and Daf Mem Zayin, whether it's Kelo Shokona or Kelo Shomakna, which is, relates a little bit to the question you were asked before. Meaning, whose Sudar, whose pen are we using? Right, the guy who is giving up his object, or the guy who is acquiring it. So we paskin that it's Kalev Shel Kona, meaning because, you know, it looks like an exchange at least. I'm acquiring something, and therefore I should give up my sudar to you in exchange or symbolic exchange of what it is I'm receiving. And that's how we paskin, and that's the view of Ra. But Levi didn't understand it that way. He thought it was Kalev Shel Makne. And it's based on, the Gemara says, it's based on how you read that Pasuk in Rus, Vzos Lefanim B'Yisrael, right, Al Agula V'Al Atmura, Shalef Yishnal V'Nasan L'Riehu, like who's giving to who? Right? So that's the question. So the idea that it might be Kalev Shel Makne is really surprising. That's also singular. Where do you have a Kinyan where, instead of, you know, quid pro quo exchange, right, you have like a double hakna. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, maybe we'll discuss it next year if we have a chance, but the Gemara has like a suggestion that, what is this, like a Kinyan Agav or something? Like a, you know, what is that exactly? So and then the Gemara says, no, but what it actually means is a little bit unclear. So the point is, if it's really a Kinyan Das, you know, it's a measure of your commitment. Then being like in a makna mode, you know, even symbolically previously, kind of helps you to focus on relinquishing or transferring what it is that you're really transferring. You transfer something kind of to get in the mode and to show that you're concretely serious about hakna, and then you makna the actual, you know, object of the kinyan. So anyways, the continuation of Tosis and this question whether or not Pshara Tzricha Kinyan is Dafka Kinyan Suda or others will be part of the story. What remains to be done, I want to finish off next week before we move on to the next Gemara, is we still have to talk about Pshara Ein Tzricha Kinyan itself, and I want to talk about, I mentioned last week, I just didn't get to it this week, two particular issues. One is when there's an outstanding shtar. Let's say I want to give up, I have the right to collect $100, but there's an outstanding, I also have a shtar in my pocket. Will we still say Mechila Ein Tzricha Kinyan even though there's a shtar? Will we still say Mechila Ein Tzricha Kinyan if I have a mashkon in my hand? I lent you $100, I took a pawn to secure the repayment of the loan, I'm holding on to the mashkon, can we still apply the rule of Mechila Ein Tzricha Kinyan or not? So I want to speak about those, that rule and those cases a little bit, and then hopefully we'll move on to, I think, Chesam and Aleph, which is our next topic.